doesn't know. Neither does your mom. The truth, please. Why are you sneaking around with that drone? I'll tell you, he says. But first, you've got to make me a promise. It's a big one. All right, Dad. But there's something I need in return. 10. Where's your gun? It sounds like I'm talking with a gangster.
In a safe place. Relax, says my father.
You left a box of ammo on the seat of your truck at Tom Minor.
That's Montana, Billy, not Florida.
We're riding through town in the red pickup. My bike is in the cargo bed. I give him the SD memory card that fell out of his quadcopter. You'll need this for future ops. He slips the card into the breast pocket of his suit. I flushed that baby tooth you gave me, I say. Whose was it anyway?
Yours, Billy. Who else's would it be? I asked your mom to send me one. This was a couple years after I moved out.
Dad, you didn't just move out. You bailed out. When he says he's sorry, I hear real pain. It makes me feel bad about getting rid of that dumb little molar.
There's no excuse, he says, for how I've acted, for not calling you all these years. I just didn't think I could handle it. The sound of your voice and your sister's. I was afraid I'd fall apart on the phone and make things even worse. It was me being a coward, Billy. Nothing more complicated than that. As time went by, the fear turned to shame.
I'm not sure what he wants me to say. He's right. There's no excuse. Sending that check every month, does that make you feel better? My father chuckles bitterly.
Like I was a better person, you mean? I've probably talked myself into thinking that. But I don't send the money just because I feel guilty. I feel responsible, too. There's a difference, son. You understand?
Part of me likes it when he calls me son, and part of me gets a little ticked off.
The thing about the inheritance from Aunt Sophie, Dad goes on, it took away one of my worst worries. Because then I knew that no matter what was going on in your mom's life, you guys would always have a roof over your head and some cash in the bank.
When we get to the house, he parks in the driveway behind Mom's car. We just sit there, and sit there, and sit there some more, while the engine idles. Finally, I reach over to turn off the ignition. It's gonna be okay, I say. She wants to see you. She sounded fine when I called. His hands are still welded to the steering wheel.
I did a radius search using the GPS of this address as a base. That's how I found her latest eagle nest.
I watched the video on the SD card.
The male bird chased after my drone. You see that?
Yeah, it was sick. Hey, Dad?
What?
Are you ready to go inside?
Give me another minute, he says.
Mom's face is at the kitchen window. It breaks my heart to see that she's put on some makeup. My father straightens his tie. He coughs a couple of times to clear his throat. Let's go, I say. You hang out with grizzlies and wolves, and you're not afraid of them.
They're more predictable, Billy.
I walk around to his side of the truck and open the door. When I reach for his arm, he pulls away, saying,
Easy now. I seriously think you busted some ribs.
In slow motion, he descends from the pickup and follows me up the walkway. The front door swings open, and there stands my mother, framed in the light.
Hi, Chrissy, Dad says.
Hello, Dennis. Why are you dressed like an undertaker?
Fair enough, he says with a sheepish grin.
My sister is hopelessly addicted to social media,
Snapface, Insta-Twit, MeTube, whatever. Sometimes I hide her phone as a test. Her average freak-out time is between 3 and 4 minutes. After that, she starts dashing around the house like an insane person, flipping over sofa cushions, yanking out drawers, and groping blindly under the furniture. "Where's my phone? Where's my expletive phone?" Truly, it's entertaining to see. One night, while Belinda was in one of her online trances, I caught her staring at a photograph of a pot roast. "Now you're scaring me," I said. "Brittany's cousin posted what she cooked for dinner. I'm just liking it, that's all. Mind your own business." "Let me get this straight. Some person snaps a photo of a greasy slab of meat and shares it with the world. Then the world is expected to respond." Belinda frowns. "It's rude not to like somebody else's picture." "But what if you're a vegetarian and don't approve of beef? That's called an ethical dilemma, right? Maybe your response could be a picture of an artichoke." "Just shut up, Billy." Belinda also posts random photos of food, and photos of her clothes, and her shoes, and, for variety, Muffin, the neighbor's cat. I watch her taking these pictures, but I never see them because I avoid social media. It's a choice, not a judgment. There are two types of people, those who want to be noticed and those who don't. I'm not saying one is better than the other. I'm just saying I'd rather be totally off the radar. Clearly, my father feels the same way. Yet here's Belinda, tracking him with her cell phone the moment he enters the house. She's doing a video. He's trying hard not to look miserable. "Hi, sweetie." He manages a smile. "Wow, you're all grown up." "No kidding," she says. I tell her to knock it off. "Why? This is a major family moment. Someday we'll all cherish the memory. Not." Mom steps between my father and my sister, blocking her camera angle. Belinda lowers her phone. Dad says, "You've got every right to be mad." He seems thinner, almost shrunken in that depressing black suit. My mother steers him to the couch and positions herself right beside him. "Belinda, could you please get us some coffee? Your father takes his with cream, no sugar." Dad smiles gratefully. Mom and Belinda are locked in an icy stare-off, which Mom wins. My sister groans and stalks to the kitchen. I'm hoping she doesn't come back and dump the coffee in Dad's lap. "So, what have you been up to, Dennis?" my mother asks. "Billy tells me you're married to a Native American." You're thinking, could this possibly be more awkward? Answer, nope. "She's from the Crow Nation." "I love her name, Little Thunder Sky. Where'd you two get married?"
"Everyone calls her Lil. We didn't have, like, a courthouse wedding."
"So it was a traditional tribal ceremony?"
No, it was private."
Dad must be writhing on the inside.
"Just me, Lil, and her daughter. We went camping in the crazy mountains."
"That's what they're really called? No way."
"Yep, the crazies."
He laughs dryly.
"Perfect, huh?"
I'm actually on the verge of feeling sorry for him. Belinda returns with the coffee. She hands one cup to Mom and one to Dad. I can't stand the stuff. Mom claims it tastes better when you're older.
"Please stay," Dad calls to my sister, who's already halfway to her bedroom, "until I've said what I came to say."
Belinda sullenly returns and plants herself in a chair across from the sofa. "This should be priceless," she mutters. Mom shoots her a glance that says, "Back off and give the man a chance." After a deep, grim sigh, my father begins his apology speech. It's not terrible. He stumbles through some of it, probably because he's nervous. He repeats the "no excuses" line several times,
which makes me believe he doesn't have a script memorized in his head. I think he means what he's saying.
Mom doesn't take her eyes off him. At one point, she wipes something that might be a tear from her cheek. Still, I'm not sure what she's feeling. Is it sorrow? Or pity? Or both?
Dad doesn't paint a very flattering portrait of himself as a younger man, impulsive, restless, unreliable.
I loved you kids and I loved your mother, he says. But it got to feel like I couldn't breathe. I had to leave. At least, I thought I had to leave. So I did.
Belinda, who's been fake staring at her fingernails the whole time, looks up and asks,
So why show up now?
I wouldn't have dreamed of coming all this way and bothering you, but after seeing Billy out in Montana...
No, it was your drone that saw me, I cut in.
Mom and Belinda heard the whole story.
The point is, says Dad, knowing Billy had traveled so far to see me, I thought it was time to grow up and reintroduce myself to three people I've never stopped caring about. I was hoping all of you might be open to at least listening, which you have, and I'm thankful.
My sister rolls her eyes, one of her go-to snarky moves.
Dad's actually here on business, I add pointedly. That's the main reason.
Not the main reason, he insists, a co-reason.
Mom says, Let's hear more about your work, Dennis. What can you tell us?
Not much, unfortunately. It's classified.
So you're a drone spy. Even if he is, I cut in, he wouldn't be allowed to admit it.
Dad says,
Billy's right.
This is the promise I made to him, that I'd back up his story, even though I know the truth.
It won't be a permanent commitment if he doesn't honor his end of the bargain. When you lived with us, you couldn't even hold down a job in a shoe store, says Belinda, sarcastic again. Now you want us to believe you're a secret agent for the U.S. government?
Dad smiles weakly.
It turned out I was actually good at something. Who knew, right?
Mom says, Belinda, Billy, could you guys please... She motions down the hallway toward the bedrooms. Your father and I would like a few minutes alone to talk. I'm pretty sure that's the last thing my father would like, but this time he'll get no help from me.
Belinda follows me into my room, shuts the door, and sits on the floor.
So, what do you think?
He's trying, I say.
Yeah, but what's his game? His angle?
Her legs are crossed, and her toes are wiggling.
Obviously, he wants something.
Maybe all he wants is forgiveness, I say,
or the possibility of forgiveness.
Oh, that's a good one, Billy. That's rich.
Look, he's got money, a nice house, a whole other family. Why would he risk messing up his new life unless his conscience was bothering him?
Wait, you're saying he's got a conscience?
I think he does, sure.
I also think he's still got a few loose bolts rattling around inside his head.
Know what scares me?
Belinda is serious now. No more snark. She's got my mother's sea-blue eyes, super intense.
She says, I'm scared Mom still has a thing for him.
She doesn't, I say, which is what I want to believe.
Did you check out that Katy Perry lipstick?
Come on, it's not that bad. And just because she wants to look nice doesn't mean she's in love with him.
But what if she is, Billy?
Then we help her get past it.
Because it's over, right?
So over, I say. There's a light knock on the door, followed by Mom's voice.
Billy, your dad wants to see your snake collection.
My sister rolls her eyes.
Know what? You two nature freaks deserve each other.
Dad is waiting in the garage.
I take the lid off the glass tank that holds the yellow rat snakes, which are actually pumpkin-colored. They've got thin, dark stripes all the way to the tips of their tails.
Can I hold one, Billy?
Better not. They're biters, I say.
I'll be careful.
With hot, tempered snakes, the key is how you handle them. Most people try to grab them behind the head, which triggers a bite reflex. One trick I use is to slip both hands beneath the snake's body and lift up so slowly that it doesn't get alarmed. Rat snakes are climbers, so they're used to being above the ground. They'll stay pretty chill if they think they're up on a tree branch somewhere. Again, this kind of information would be worthless to a normal person. I pick up the 5-footer and carefully place it in my father's hands. Now don't squeeze, I warn, but it's too late. He squeezes. The snake whips around, chomps him on the chin, and resets for another strike. With a wince, Dad says, "Oops, my bad. Just stay super still, okay?" After a few moments, the rat snake lowers its head and starts peering around.
"Check it out, son. He's chilling now."
"It's a she," I say. My father proceeds to do an excellent imitation of a tree. The snake is definitely calmer, having wrapped around his right forearm. It's not strong enough to cut off the circulation the way a python or a boa constrictor might do.
"See, Billy? Look how peaceful she is."
Dad is trying so hard to be still that he's actually speaking without moving his jaw muscles. Meanwhile, his chin shines with a U-shaped pattern of bleeding, pin-sized holes. It looks like he's got a red goatee. I probably should have let him hold the king snake instead. That one doesn't bite. "You're dripping blood on your suit," I say.
"Good. Now I've got an excuse to throw it away."
"You've never done this before? That's hard to believe, all the time you spend out in the wild." Dad says he avoids snakes.
"It's not a full-on phobia," he adds. "I just walk the other way when I see one. Live and let live, right? Also, Montana's full of rattlers."
"I saw a beauty," I tell him, "sunning right next to your truck."
"They den high up in rock cliffs all winter. When the weather gets warm, they swarm down to the valleys and do a number on the gophers."
He is basically eye to eye with a rat snake. The fork of its glistening tongue feathers in and out of its mouth.
"What if your mother says no?"
Dad asks. "She won't," I say. He's talking about our deal, the promise he made to me in return for keeping his secret. We've lowered our voices, so Mom and Belinda can't hear us.
"Billy, I've got to leave tomorrow. First light."
"I'll be ready." Gingerly, I uncoil the snake from his arm and return it to the glass tank. Dad takes out a handkerchief and dabs the blood from his chin.
"What were you and Mom talking about in there? Old times?"
"That's personal, son."
"So you still care about her?"
"How could I not? My eagle girl," Dad says fondly. "One of these days she'll find the right guy. I know she will."
"Belinda's worried that Mom still loves you. I told her no way."
"Your mother and I talked about the way things ended between us. And we also talked about what's happened since then. The way I let you kids slip out of my life. She was kinder about it than I deserved, but no, I'm definitely not the secret love of her life."
The relief I'm feeling is difficult to hide, but I try.
"So," Dad says, "did you come up with a good cover story for the trip?"
I tell him what I plan to tell Mom. He's not convinced she'll buy it. He stands back while I unfasten the lids from the other glass tanks.
"Is your sister still pissed at me?"
he asks.
"Oh, yes. And I totally get that. But Who knows, maybe someday. Maybe, I say. Quickly, I bag up all the snakes. They don't mind sharing the same pillowcase. Dad offers to give me a ride. I stick my head in the door to tell Mom we won't be gone long.
Can't this wait until tomorrow? She asks.
Not really. Nobody else is driving on Grapefruit Road this time of night. I show Dad where to park. He angles his pickup so the headlights illuminate a path into the scrub and the trees where I let the snakes go. Dad seems impressed that the release operation ends without me getting chomped even once. On the way back to town, I ask him what to bring on our mission.
Long pants, bug juice, sunblock, band-aids, a sleeping bag, oh, and binoculars, he says. I've got all the food and water we'll need.
Don't forget your gun.
We don't mention the gun, Dad tells me sternly. The gun is strictly for emergencies.
But he's a bad guy, right? I'm talking about the man we'll be chasing, the one my father followed all the way across the country, from Montana to Florida. The same man who flattened Dad's tires and shot a hole in his truck trying to scare him off.
Yeah, says Dad. He definitely qualifies as a bad guy.
11. Summer and Lil were relieved to learn Dad was all right, but they were curious about his sudden reappearance in Florida. We were communicating by text, which made it easier for me to avoid giving a full explanation. Guilt trip is what I typed. He wanted to see me and Belinda. Their return text sounded doubtful. Maybe they're worried that he won't return to Montana, that he's decided to move back here with us. I can't tell them the main reason he came. Silence is part of the deal. Now it's crunch time, trying to convince Mom to let me leave with Dad for a few days. My story sounded way better when I rehearsed it in my bedroom.
A camping trip? She raises an eyebrow. What kind of camping trip?
You know, guything.
That's the best I can do. Pretty shaky, but I'm on my own. My father is talking with Belinda in her bedroom, trying to dent that iron shell of resentment.
Was this guy thing your idea or his? Mom asks.
Mine, totally.
That's true. It's also technically true that Dad and I will be camping.
Where, Billy?
Down in the Everglades.
Also true.
And what about your summer job?
I'm ready for that one. I checked with Mr. Voss at Publix. He's fine with me taking a few days off. I told him it was a family vacation.
My mother frowns. We're in the kitchen where she's cleaning the filter of the coffee machine. She says, I don't have a wonderful feeling about this, Billy. You guys charging off into the swamp together? There are better ways to bond.
I'll have my phone with me, Mom.
Great, she says, and if you don't answer, I'll assume it's ringing in the belly of an alligator.
I put my arms around her. I promise not to get eaten. If I do, you can ground me for the rest of the summer.
That's not funny, Billy. I don't think you should go.
So I rattle off some statistics about how rare gator attacks are. Lots more people die from bee stings, for example. My mother isn't swayed. When Dad comes out of Belinda's room, Mom cross-examines him for 20 minutes. Like me, he doesn't actually lie about the plans for our trip. He just leaves out a few key details. Listening to their back-and-forth discussion, I notice something interesting. Even though my father has been gone for years, living far away from what you'd call our family dynamic, he still knows exactly what to say to Mom. And how to say it. Not only does she give me permission to go along with him, but now she's offering to help me pack. Amazing. So, props to smooth-talking Dad, the amateur man-hunter. I wish I could play the guitar. Mom once offered to pay for lessons, but I said, no thanks. I haven't got enough patience to sit down and strum chords for hours after school. I need to be outside in the woods or on the water, even when it's pouring rain. Otherwise, I'll go cray-cray, as my sister would say. If only somebody would invent a super-fast way to learn a musical instrument, some type of overnight audio hypnosis, where you could wake up in the morning and magically start playing like Eric Clapton. The reason I'm thinking about this, we're in the truck, an hour before sunrise, and a Clapton song called Get Ready is blasting on the speakers. Dad's got a sweet playlist, I admit. Oldies but goodies. It's way better than being trapped in a moving vehicle with Belinda, which means non-stop Taylor Swift. Not even Taylor Swift's mother listens to as much Taylor Swift as my sister does. Dad says, if we have time, I'll teach you how to fly the drone. Did you replace that broken propeller? I replaced all of them, he reports, to maximize performance. You'll see. We're passing through a town called Okeechobee, on the north side of the famous lake. The outskirts feature vast sod farms that supply new grass for lawns and golf courses. The fields are so bright green that they look spray-painted. My father asks if Mom got up early to make me breakfast. She tried. I sent her back to bed and ate a bowl of cereal. What was her state of mind, Billy? I think she's a little worried about this trip. Are you? Not at all, I say, untruthfully. Tell me his name. The guy we're chasing.
You mean the guy we're tracking.
What's the difference?
Baxter.
Dad spells it.
Lincoln Chumley Baxter.
So he's crazy rich.
How'd you guess?
Because regular people don't name their kids Lincoln Chumley anything. Dad laughs.
Even better. It's Lincoln Chumley Baxter the Fourth. His family owns a couple of skyscrapers in San Francisco. He's never worked a day in his life. All he does is...
Where's the G word?
Stop asking, Billy. Is it loaded? Because that would make me nervous.
A sod truck is ahead of us, its flatbed stacked high with freshly cut squares of grass. The backdraft from the load smells like wet fertilizer. Mom would have rocketed past the truck miles ago, but Dad hangs back, taking it easy. I'm still trying to deal with the fact it's just me and him cruising along on a sunny summer morning, listening to tunes, like we do this together all the time. Like this is how I grew up. Like he never went away. Why did Baxter come to Florida? I ask.
Same reason he was in Montana. To kill something.
So he's a poacher?
Not just an ordinary poacher, Billy. He doesn't do it for food or to make money. He does it purely for his ego, some lame notion of glory.
What was he hunting in the Tom Minor Basin?
He wanted a big grizzly. He didn't get one.
Thanks to you, right? That's why there's a bullet hole in your fender.
My father shrugs. Mr. Baxter wasn't a happy camper. Literally.
Not long ago, the government removed the Yellowstone grizzly from its list of threatened species, claiming there are now enough bears that they don't need to be legally protected anymore. Dad says some western states will soon start selling licenses to hunt the grizzlies, like in the old days. In other words, we saved an animal from extinction just so we could start killing it again. How messed up is that? According to my father, a bunch of lawsuits have been filed in protest, trying to block the bear hunts. So, until the courts make a decision, it's still a crime in Montana to shoot a grizz, except in self-defense. A few rich outlaws do it anyway, paying big bucks for their sick thrills. I asked Dad why he didn't call wildlife officers when Lincoln Baxter was stalking grizzlies at Tom Minor.
They couldn't make a case against him until he actually killed a bear, and I didn't want a bear to get killed.
so I dealt with Baxter my own way. Wherever he went, I went there too, like a shadow. Eventually he got mad and gave up.
So now he comes all the way to Florida to shoot what? I ask. Then it dawns on me.
Oh no, not one of those.
Dad's hands curl into fists on the steering wheel.
Like I said, he's a bad guy.
We stop at a fast food joint outside of LaBelle and order cheeseburgers with fries. I'm drinking regular Coke, he's drinking diet. I didn't get much sleep last night because I was worried we'd run out of stuff to talk about, living such far apart lives, but it's just the opposite. Dad's got as many questions for me as I've got for him.
How are your grades in school, Billy?
They're all right.
Play any sports?
I don't fit well on teams.
That's okay. Some people are joiners, some people aren't.
Besides, I add, we don't live anywhere long enough for me to get too involved with school.
Or friends?
There's no point. Not when you know you'll be moving again in a year or two. I realize it sounds like complaining, so I tell Dad I'm not. Belinda's the one who's totally over the eagle nest thing. That's the only reason she got a boyfriend, to guilt Mom into staying here until she goes to college.
What's the boyfriend like?
Hopeless, I say.
Same thing's been said about me, I'm sure.
Dad gets up to refill his soda. When he comes back to the table, I ask about the day he met Lil and Summer on the Crow Reservation. Did you crash your drone into their trailer on purpose?
You mean just so I could meet Lil? He says. I wish that were true, because it would make a better story. But the reality is I'm not that clever. It was a windy afternoon, too windy for flying, and the quadcopter got away from me. Luckily, it fell where it did, and the rest is history.
Why haven't you told Lil and Summer about your inheritance from Aunt Sophie? I've never had a problem being blunt. Why do you let them think you're some sort of government agent? Just because the lie is cooler than the truth? He rocks his chair back, more surprised than angry.
Well, being a secret agent definitely sounds cooler than being the lucky nephew of some rich old lady. But that's not why I haven't told Lil my real situation. See, she'd never, ever let me go out tracking poachers the way I do. She'd say it was crazy dangerous.
Would she be right? I ask. My father looks at his wristwatch.
We're losing time, Billy. Let's get back on the road.
Lincoln Baxter's got a room at the Lonesome Rooster Motel in Immokalee, about 25 miles away. How Dad happens to know the poacher's exact whereabouts is a mystery. He refuses to reveal the source of his intel, which he claims is rock solid. I notice he's driving faster now. We pass a crested caracara perched on a telephone pole. It's the first one I've ever seen in the wild. They've got vivid orange faces and a bluish tip on their hooked beaks. Some people call them Mexican eagles. They're so fierce that a single bird can scare a whole flock of buzzards away from a roadkill. Dad says caracaras are common in this part of Florida. I'd like to go back for a closer look, but we're in a major hurry. Or so I thought. I fall asleep for a while, but when I wake up, we're not in the sleepy old farm town of Immokalee. We're in a parking lot at a busy airport.
Fort Myers, my father says.
Change of plans?
Wait here. I'll be right back.
Dad hops out and heads for the terminal building. He's wearing a gray t-shirt, faded jeans, thick-soled trail shoes, and a Patagonia cap. The black church suit made him look much older, and not nearly so fit. I step out to stretch my legs. The phone chimes. Another text from Mom. That makes 7 today. I text her back. All good. Call you later. Now the phone starts ringing. I press the answer key without looking at the caller ID.
Mom, please relax. Everything's just fine.
Wrong mom, Billy, but it's nice to hear your voice.
Lil?
You guys at the airport yet?
We just got here. How'd you know?
I lean against the shot-up fender of Dad's Chevy.
Tell me what's going on.
Promise you'll check in every day. Otherwise, I'll be worried to death. I don't need to remind you that communication isn't your dad's strong suit.
Yeah, sure, but...
This wasn't my idea, by the way.
What wasn't your idea?
I'm fishing with clients on the river now. The cell signal might drop when we float through this canyon. A big jet takes off with a roar, drowning Lil's words. By the time I can hear anything again, the phone line is dead.
I'm wondering how much she knows about the camping trip and why Dad detoured to the Fort Myers airport.
Did he get a tip that Baxter's flight was landing this afternoon? The heat rippling up from the pavement is brutal, and my shirt is soaked with sweat. I set out toward the terminal in search of Dennis Dickens. A refreshing rush of cool air hits me when I walk through the doors into the bustle of passengers waiting around the luggage carousels. Then somebody shouts,
"Yo, Billy Big Stick!"
And here comes Summer Chasing Hawks, pulling a small plaid suitcase on rollers. My father trails a few steps behind, not looking overjoyed. When he sees me, he shrugs and raises his hands.
"Big surprise, right?"
Summer chirps as she gives me a hug. I pretend to be glad to see her, but the truth is, I'm confused and not all that thrilled. It was supposed to be just me and Dad on this trip.
"She called late last night," he murmurs sideways to me. "I couldn't say no."
"Okay. Wow." I grab the handle of Summer's travel bag, and we all head for the exit.
"Faster, Billy," she says. "The clock's ticking."
Once we're in the truck, she puts on a pair of hot pink heart-shaped sunglasses she bought at the Atlanta airport during a layover between flights. She says she wants to look like a true Florida tourist. I tell her she looks like a true Florida dork.
"Lighten up, Billy. The shades are a joke."
But she doesn't take them off, even after we stop at a barbecue joint. Dad and I aren't hungry, but Summer says she's starving after a long day on airplanes.
"3 crummy bags of pretzels is all I ate," she reports.
The restaurant is crowded, so we keep the chatter light.
Back in the pickup, I'm riding shotgun and Summer's in the rear seat.
She taps Dad on the shoulder, saying,
"Billy Big Stick doesn't understand why I'm here. Should I fill him in?"
"Please do," says Dad.
Finally, she whips off the goofy sunglasses.
"I always wanted to see the Sunshine State, so I decided to take a page from your playbook, Billy. I borrowed my mom's Visa card and bought myself a plane ticket." She was mega ticked off, but I told her Dennis said it was okay. He didn't really have a choice. Blackmail is a harsh word, but that's basically what I did.
My father doesn't flinch. He steers straight ahead, eyes fixed on the horizon.
"See, I know all about Aunt Sophie," Summer says. "A while back, when Dennis was away on one of his trips, a registered letter from a lawyer came to our house. It looked important, so I opened it. The very first sentence said Hubert the parrot was dead. I thought it was some kind of spy code. What a name for a bird. But it wasn't a coded message. The letter said that from now on, Dennis gets 100% of all the payments from something called the Sophia Dickens Trust. So what I did, I called the lawyer's office in Nassau and pretended to be your dad's executive assistant. We had a real interesting talk. Aunt Sophie left half her fortune to Hubert and the other half to her only nephew. So when Hubert died and flew off to Parrot Heaven, his share of the inheritance went to you know who."
"Not that I needed more money," my father cuts in.
My aunt had been incredibly generous. I don't say anything, because I've already figured out what happened next. When Dennis got home from his trip, Summer continues, we took a walk to the river, and I told him what I'd learned. I was pretty mad because I thought he'd made up the part about being a government agent just so he could sneak around on my mom. Then he told me he was actually spying on wild animal poachers, which is super ballsy but also semi-nuts. Mom would go ballistic if she knew, so I never said a word. But when I called Dennis last night and told him I was coming to Florida, he said, no way, it's too risky. So I had to play hardball, Billy.
Meaning you threatened to tell Lil the truth about Dad's drone trips? My stepsister's response is a half-mischievous smile.
Did I cross the line, brother?
She's asking the wrong person.
So what does Lil think you're doing here? I ask. Camping with you guys. She grins. Experiencing the sunshine state.
Dad steps on the brakes. I expect him to turn around and snap at Summer, but that's not the reason he stopped. He points to a yellow sign posted on the shoulder of the road. It features the black silhouette of a large, sleek cat.
Panther, Dad says. That's what Baxter came here to shoot.
Summer asks, aren't they the same thing as the mountain lions out west? Different subspecies, I explain. Ours are almost extinct.
Which is why Baxter wants to kill one, my father adds, before they're all gone.
Summer hisses, what a jackass, or possibly a stronger word. Okay, Dennis, tell us the secret hero plan. You've got one, right?
Not yet, he sighs. See, usually I work alone.
12. The Crow Indians have faced many fierce enemies, including the Blackfoot, Cheyenne, Lakota, and other competing tribes. If nobody had ever bothered them, the Crow might have stayed in Ohio, of all places, where they grew crops. Their descendants ended up on horseback in Wyoming and Montana, roaming the plains and river valleys in pursuit of the great buffalo herds. Then the white men arrived and slaughtered almost all the buffalo. Many Crow died from smallpox brought by the waves of strange settlers. Tribal leaders tried to maintain peace with the U.S. government, even as their lands were being taken away. Now, after more than 150 years on a reservation, the tribe is struggling to save some of its sacred customs. I got this from an online search about the Crow culture. That's also how I recognize the earrings that Summer Chasing Hawks is wearing. They're made from fossil seashells. It's an ancient tribal craft. She says, they belonged to my great-grandmother. She lived to be 99 years old. I guess that's a good thing. I'm getting used to the idea of Summer joining the Everglades mission. She keeps the mood light, which is helpful. We're staying at a motel called the Diamond Checkers. The room has only 2 beds, so I laid out my sleeping bag on the floor. My father walked down to the Lonesome Rooster to see if the poacher's SUV was in the parking lot. It wasn't. Dad says Baxter drives a jet black Range Rover with a joke bumper sticker that says, Trophy Husband. How can you be sure he's here? I ask.
Reliable informant.
Dad is stretched out on one of the beds. His eyes are closed.
There aren't many Range Rovers in this town. We'll find him.
This is the same informant who helped you in Montana?
Correct, says Dad, rolling over to face the wall.
Summer and I turn off the lights, go outside, and sit on the tailgate of the pickup. The heat makes the damp air feel heavier. In the distant sky is a tower of violet clouds that will soon bloom into a thunderstorm. I hear the piping cries of an osprey, which means we're near water.
I think I like Florida, Summer says.
Wait till you see the concrete parts.
You know what I can't get over? How totally flat it is.
Makes it easy for the bulldozers, I say.
Tell me the real reason you decided to come on this trip.
It wasn't just because you wanted to see a palm tree.
She shrugs one shoulder. I was pretty sure Dennis would visit you and your mom and your sister while he was here.
And you were afraid he wouldn't come back to Montana?
No!
Her brown eyes flare.
Not afraid. Concerned is all. Just a little.
So I was right. Summer, there's no way he'd ever leave you and Lil. You're his family now.
So are you guys, once upon a time, and he left you, didn't he?
A lot's happened since then. Dad's changed.
I'm surprised to hear myself defending him. I hope I'm not wrong.
Summer smiles.
You got a girlfriend, Billy Big Stick?
Nope. She slaps a mosquito on my arm, leaving a small smear of blood.
Aren't you going to ask if I've got a boyfriend?
I wasn't planning to.
His name is Davy. He's a full-blooded crow, and he's older than me. It's not like we're serious or doing anything. All the girls like him, so I expect to be dumped. Maybe I'll dump him first. What do you think?
I think I need to escape this conversation. I'm thirsty, I say, pointing to the 7-Eleven down the street. You want something to drink? Summer gets the hint.
Sounds good.
Inside the store, we seem to be the only ones speaking English. All the other customers are migrant farm workers, sun-beaten and sweaty. Their faces are dusty and their hands are worn from picking row crops all day. It's rough, hot work. Dad said the spring harvest is mostly over, but some fields still have new tomatoes and sweet corn. Summer and I order blue raspberry Slurpees. I ask her what kind of gun Dad carries on his surveillance trips.
12-gauge side by side, she replies.
Good choice, I say, like I actually understand what she's talking about. Outside the 7-Eleven, we sit on the curb to finish our Slurpees. Three short-haired hounds are watching us from the front seat of a gray kennel truck, the same kind used by animal control, only this one has no lettering on the side. The driver's window is open halfway, so I walk across the parking lot to check out the dogs. They look like triplets, lean and long-legged. The saddled patterns on their coats are practically identical, brown, black, and white. When I reach in to pet their snouts, they wiggle their butts and whine excitedly. A man walking out of the store yells,
"Don't touch them dogs!"
I step back from the truck.
"They'll bite your fingers off, boy."
I find that very hard to believe. The man has a cigarette in his mouth and a bag of groceries in one arm. A six-pack of beer swings in his free hand. His eyes are hidden behind mirrored sunglasses. The pale hat on his head is a Stetson style, though his rubber-soled boots are made for hiking, not horseback riding.
"What are their names?" I ask the man.
"Mandy, Candy, and Andy."
"Oh, come on."
"You best stand clear,"
he says with zero trace of a smile. The dogs quiet down the moment he gets in the truck. He speeds away without waving or even a nod. Summer walks up and says,
"What's his problem?"
"He didn't want me petting those vicious hellhounds.
I thought Texans were friendly."
"Anyone can buy a cowboy hat."
"I wasn't talking about the hat," she says. "I was talking about the license plate."
"What made you look?"
"It's a Montana thing. We always check out the tags on cars and trucks to see where the tourists are coming from. One July, I counted 24 different states, and even Guam. That's the only bad part about living in a beautiful place, right? The summer stampede."
"In Florida, it's all year round," I say. The dark clouds have arrived, and it's starting to sprinkle. We hear thunder breaking not far away. Summer says,
You never told me what to do about Davy, my boyfriend.
Just when I thought I'd dodged this subject.
Can he cast a fly rod? I ask. I doubt it.
Then you should definitely dump him.
She looks surprised. Seriously, Billy?
No, not seriously, but that's what you get for asking someone like me about relationships.
Back at the motel, my father is sitting on the bed, watching TV and waiting on a phone call from his informant. I tell him about the guy who owned the matching dogs with rhyming names.
He was one grumpy-ass Texan, says Summer. Last of the Marlboro men.
Dad bolts upright and swings his bare feet to the floor.
What did he look like? How do you know where he's from?
She explains about the license plate.
The dude was about the same height as you, only older and all leathery, like a legit cowboy.
What about the dogs? Dad asks.
Now he's tying on his shoes.
Were they black and brown and white? Kinda skinny?
Yeah, with big ears, I say, and a thin tail that curves upward.
Walker hounds!
He points at my phone.
Google a picture of a walker. See if it's the same breed.
Summer and I scroll through the photos online. There's no question it was the same kind of dog we saw in the Texan's kennel truck. Dad tucks in his shirt, snatches up his keys.
One more thing, he says. Those hounds, did they bark? This is important. Did you hear any barking?
Summer and I both shake our heads.
Damn,
Dad grunts and practically runs out the door. We're right on his heels.
Something else I picked up from the internet. Lincoln Chumley Baxter IV was born 32 years ago in San Francisco. He's the son of Lincoln Chumley Baxter III, the grandson of Lincoln Chumley Baxter II, and the great-grandson of Lincoln Chumley Baxter I. If he ever has a boy of his own, Lincoln Chumley Baxter IV will undoubtedly name the poor kid Lincoln Chumley Baxter V. At least on paper, Baxter the poacher has a day job. He is listed as a vice president of the Royal Alcatraz Development Corp., which is owned by his father and two uncles. The company builds office towers and high-rise condos in Northern California. Dad says Baxter the poacher has no regular contact with the family business. They basically pay him not to show up. The photograph on his Linkhead page is of a tanned man with a smug, wormy smile, a bent nose, and silly blonde-tipped hair. He describes himself as a prominent corporate executive, generous philanthropist, experienced pilot, 6.0 tennis player, and international sportsman. It's the same profile that he posted on a site called BraveWhiteHunter.com, where Summer found his name next to a different photo. Baxter wearing a bush hat and a leather vest, cradling a rifle while posing on top of a dead Alaskan moose.
Macho man,
Summer snorts when she shows me the picture. From the driver's seat, Dad says,
Here's somebody else you need to Google. Axel Burnside.
Is that the Texan? I ask.
He spells it A-X-E-L.
The name pops up immediately. Axel Burnside of Waco, Texas. It's the same guy we saw outside the 7-Eleven. Wikipedia says he's a famous trainer of hunting dogs, and not just any old hunting dogs. He specializes in walker hounds that track mountain lions and other wild cats. His reputation reaches all the way to Central and South America, where wealthy landowners hire him for jaguar hunts in the rainforests. I had no idea they used dog packs. Not exactly a fair fight, is it?
Duh, is Summer's response.
Dad says walkers are fast, and they can run for miles.
They'll chase an animal until it's totally exhausted. All that's left for the hunter is to walk up, aim his gun, and bam, point blank. That's the ball game.
What's so special about Burnside's dogs? I ask.
He trains them not to bark, Billy.
They track silently so the cat doesn't hear him coming till it's too late. Once it goes up a tree, the dogs start howling like maniacs. That's how they let the hunter know where they're at.
Summer says, "So you think Baxter hired Burnside to help him find a panther?"
"There's no other reason for Baxter and those dogs to be in the same town at the same time."
We drove all over searching for Burnside's truck. Now we're parked in a steady rain across the street from the Lonesome Rooster Motel, where Baxter is supposedly staying. Dad's secret informant finally called up with a few details about tomorrow's hunt. I'm reading what's been posted about Axel Burnside on the internet. It sounds like the man has all the legit business he can handle. "Why risk everything for an outlaw job like this?" I say. "He could wind up in prison." Dad thinks it's no mystery.
"Baxter probably offered him so much money he couldn't turn it down. Cash talks, and big cash talks even louder."
An hour passes with no sign of the poacher or the dog trainer. Dad's got the air conditioning blasting and the radio tuned to a deep rock station. The music is fine with me, but Summer acts like she's being tortured. Finally, she plugs in her earbuds and retreats to her own private playlist, disappearing behind those tacky $3 sunglasses. Dad says Baxter doesn't use hounds when he's hunting grizzlies in Montana.
"He tried once. The dogs never came back, and he had to pay their owner $12,000. So now he just leaves a dead deer in the meadows where the bears like to feed."
"Is that what happened at Tom Miner?"
"Yeah, and it almost worked," Dad says. "But some concerned citizen buzzed the bear with a drone, and it ran away before Baxter could take a shot. Turns out grizzlies aren't fond of low-flying objects."
Picturing that scene makes me grin. I bet Baxter was mad.
Extremely.
"So mad," Summer says, "he slashed the tires on the drone pilot's truck and put a bullet in the fender," I add. My father smiles ruefully. I ask him if the bear he frightened off was a female with two cubs.
"How'd you know?"
"Because I saw her too. At first, I wasn't sure if she was real, but I am now." Dad switches on the windshield wipers for a few flaps to clear our view of the motel across the street. Fat raindrops thump the roof of the truck. The song on the radio is called "Mr. Tambourine Man." I've heard it before, on one of Mom's stations. She likes to sing along with the music no matter what's playing. It's sort of annoying, even though she has an okay voice. "You want to sing?" my sister always tells her. "Go to a karaoke bar." Mom knows all the Taylor Swift songs, so there are times when I've got to restrain myself from leaping out of the car window. I don't complain like Belinda, though, because if singing makes Mom happy, it's worth putting up with. After observing my father all day, I can totally picture him and Mom getting together when they were young. Both of them are free spirits. By that, I mean they sail with no anchor, but they care about the same sorts of things. Mom's got her eagles, Dad's got his bears and panthers. Their hearts are on the same page. Not that I wish they were still married, because I can also see why it didn't work. My father was the one who packed up and left, but my mother's just as restless in her own way. Maybe one day she'll find someone who can steady her the way Lil steadies Dad. I've been waiting for a quiet moment to ask what happened to his parents, so I do.
"Car accident," he says. His voice is a raw whisper.
"How come you never talked to Mom about it?"
"Back then, I never talked to anyone about it. I should have, but I didn't."
He turns to check on Summer in the back seat. She's got her eyes shut, rocking out to her tunes.
"There is a turtle in the road," he says.
"A what?"
"The woman driving behind them said they swerved to miss a turtle in the road. This was at like 70 miles an hour on the turnpike. My father lost control
and the car veered into a canal. The sadness on his face is crushing. All I can say is, "Dad, that's terrible. I'm really, really sorry."
A turtle. It was even in the